Well, it's nice to see some familiar faces and many, many new faces, and really an honor to be here at Seattle Insight Meditation Society. So thanks for taking some time out of your evening and out of your life to come share some time together. I feel very honored to be together this evening. Why don't we start with some meditation practice together? So one of the things that we learn in meditation practice is that we don't have to wait for the sound of the bell to let go. For the tightness and the struggle and the stress that we're feeling to be released. It's really a tremendous offering, this practice of meditation and the whole contemplative path. It's a tremendous potential to understand what it is to be alive and to be human. And to really do something worthwhile with our lives, to enhance the gifts that we have. We each have gifts. To learn how to make the most of our time here on the planet with one another, and to stop getting in our own way so much. One of the many famous quotes that comes from the early Buddhist texts, the Dhammapada, which is a collection of sayings. It's one of the most translated books on the planet. The Buddha says, "No one can do you more harm, not a thief or a hater, than your own untrained mind. And no one can do you more benefit, no one can do you more good, neither a friend nor a lover nor your parents, than your own well-trained, well-directed mind." So everything that we experience, everything that we know in life, passes through the filter of our own awareness, of our own heart and mind. And so it's like wearing glasses, you know? You wear glasses, everything passes through those lenses. And if those lenses are dirty, then everything's going to have that kind of smudge or blur to it. So if our mind is not well trained, if our mind is driven by forces of confusion and self-centeredness or greed or fear, control and fixation, then it's gonna shape our experience of everything in our life, our relationships to one another, our relationship to ourselves, to our work. And if our mind is clear, if it's bright and open, if it's infused with qualities like patience and kindness and generosity and truthfulness, then that's going to color our experience. That's going to shape the way that we see and relate to ourselves, to others, to the world. So the offering, the invitation of this practice is immense. It's really immense. It says that each of us has the potential to do this. To clean the mind and the heart, and to see more clearly. Oh, there you are. to not be seeing through the past, the filters of the wounds that we carry, the things people said to us, the way we were let down, the things that were done maybe that should never have been done, or the things that weren't done that should have been done, you know. To not be living through that, but to be able to be here in this moment and to meet this moment fresh, awake, alert, and free. It's a tremendous offering. So for myself, I came to this practice in my late teens and early 20s, just through different circumstances in life and struggling a lot. My parents are getting divorced. I lost a few friends and relationships. I was doing a lot of drugs. Just generally lost and suffering. And you know, found out about meditation through various ways, and oh wow, this is really, I want to learn more about this. This can help me. I had some sense this can help me. And it did. It helped me a lot. It really put my life on a very different course. But what I found was after about 5 or 6 years of really, you know, meditating pretty diligently, twice a day, 45 minutes, and doing the whole thing, I found that as soon as I opened my mouth, all of the like insight and clarity and like open-heartedness and beauty, and it was just evaporate. You know, if I had a conflict with a coworker, I forget about family, you know, talking to my folks or my brother or something, it was just out the window. And so, you know, that didn't really make sense to me. You know, I recognize that, okay, if this stuff isn't translating, if it's not showing up in my relationships, then something's off here, right? It's fine to sit there with your eyes closed and feel happy and peaceful and send love to the world, but, you know, if someone cuts you off in traffic and you lose it, like, what's the point, right? Or if someone, you know, gets in front of you in the line for coffee or whatever and you're seething with rage, it's like, well, what am I doing when I'm doing my spiritual practice? So it was about that time that I was fortunate enough to attend a professional development training at the place where I was working on communication. And I was about 25. I had never even heard of such a thing as communication training. I thought, what do you mean? I know how to speak. I can communicate just fine. But I didn't actually realize that you could learn how to communicate better, that was something that could actually be developed in the same way that we can develop the capacity for clear seeing and open-heartedness internally. Even so, relationally, we can develop the capacity to listen in certain ways, listen in ways that are more connecting, that allow us to understand what people are saying and to see and hear the best in them, even when they're speaking to us in ways that we don't enjoy. And that we can find ways to speak, to express ourselves openly, honestly, while still being kind, and to do so in a way that makes it more likely that other people are going to hear what it is we're really trying to get across. And so this was like a revelation to me. I was like, whoa, this is amazing. I can actually study this stuff. There are tools, there are practices. There's a training that I can take. And it gave me a method to translate what was happening here on the cushion here into my relationships and my conversations. you pause for a moment and step back and think about some of the happiest times of your life, times when you felt the most joy, the most fulfillment, however fleeting. I wouldn't be surprised. I would be surprised if many of those times didn't include other people. Some of our most fulfilling experiences, our most meaningful, joyful experiences in life often include other people. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And then if you look at the other side, some of the most painful, the most challenging or sorrowful times of our lives, other people, right? We are deeply relational creatures. Relationship is, as I was saying earlier before the meditation, it's wired into us. It's deeply embedded in our biology, in our consciousness, the sense of relating to one another. And the quality of our relationships determines to a large degree our happiness, our sense of well-being, our sense of our worldly success in the world. So much of it depends on how our relationships are going. What is a relationship? A relationship is a series of interactions over time, right? That's what a relationship is. We have some kind of interaction in person, on the phone, social media, email, whatever. We have this ongoing set of interactions. And those interactions are composed, not exclusively, but primarily of communication. We're communicating with one another. And we're doing this in every area of our life, at home, at work, with friends, even when we're alone, right? There's that narration going. So how much training do we have? How skilled are we? This very, very kind of central core skill in our life that's building the currency of our whole network of relationships to communicate, right? I would be shocked if more than one or two people in this room like had a communications course in K through 12. We don't teach this stuff in school. So the fact of the matter is actually that we've all had lots of communication training. It's just generally been unconscious and unintentional, right? We've been trained to communicate by our family, by our religion, our community, our culture, our society, by the media. We all learn to speak or communicate in some ways, and so we pick up all of the patterns and the habits of the world around us. And then we do the best we can with what we've got. And so we look around at the world today, and how's that going? Right? So the need for these tools is clear. The need for these communication tools, not only in our personal lives. I mean, if we look in our personal lives, for most of us, it's pretty clear that having better communication skills would be helpful. Whether it's at work, with friends, in intimate relationships, family, it can only help to be able to listen and speak with more skill and balance and patience and clarity. But beyond the personal and the interpersonal level, we look at what's happening in our country. I mean, how many of you had a holiday meal where you're unable to talk to certain relatives about, you know, views and beliefs and politics or religion because it's just too inflammatory? Or we can't even have the conversation. Forget about, like, in the media or in the public, we can't have the conversation in our own home. What does that say about where we're at as a society? When we can't even talk about our differences, that's not healthy. We don't know where we're going as a species right now. There's so much uncertainty in terms of the trajectory of the environment and the planet. Not to mention other areas of the kind of institutions that support civilization. We're living in a very, very, very uncertain time where suffering is increasing drastically and may continue to increase. We don't know what's coming. We don't know, you know, how we will be able to address the problems we're facing. But regardless of where we're going, the tools of contemplative practice, of knowing how to stay clear and balanced in the face of change and suffering, those tools are essential, whatever's coming. Right? That's what this world needs. This world needs people who are awake and who can stay present without moving into hatred and fear, selfishness and reactivity. There are many ways to get there. Contemplative practice is one. It's the one that, you know, myself and Tim and many of us here in the room have devoted a lot of time to. And then the tools of communication, right? Those are essential to face what's happening and to learn how to work together. So as human beings, we depend on one another to live. You know, we're not creatures that are independent in spite of the myths of our society. We can't survive on our own. We need the tribe physically, physiologically, but also relationally. We need one another to survive. So there's a lot to recommend these tools and this training. And what's fascinating about communication training is that, about communication itself and communication training, is it sits at this very unique place in human experience. So if we just focus on the external, if we just focus on communication training, but we don't actually look inside and try to attend to our emotions or our beliefs or our thoughts, it's incomplete. Because that's what's animating the communication, right? But if we just look inside, if we just focus on the emotions and the beliefs and the impulses and the thoughts, but we don't actually learn how to translate it, that's also incomplete. You see that? So communication is this bridge between the inner and the outer. Right? The very fact that you're able to listen and understand what I'm saying right now is a manifestation of that. So the words and the ideas that are coming through this particular mind and body in this moment that you're contemplating. Right? It's this experience of what's inside for me, what I experience as internally being produced and shared externally, and then somehow becoming internal for you. You see that? So in learning communication training, we get to do both at the same time. Because it holds this role, so our communication is this tremendous vehicle for transformation, because it shapes how we view things, how we see things, how we relate to things, the thoughts, the stories that we're telling ourselves is coloring everything. And at the same time, at the very same time as we're communicating, as we're engaging, the conversations that we have, the kinds of communication we're exposed to, those reinforce and shape the habits and patterns in our own mind. So our mind shapes our communication and our relationships. Our communication and our relationships shapes our mind, and it's this cycle. So when we start working on communication, we can work on both at the same time. Both are involved, which is why having some tools of meditation or mental training is so essential for communication. We need some kind of method to become aware of and work with the stuff inside. And then we also need a method to work with the stories and the words. So this is what I've spent a lot of the last 15 or 20 years of my adult life really looking at, is this intersection between the inner of contemplative practice and the outer and the relational of communication. So I want to share just a few tools with you this evening. And these tools kind of form the structure of my new book, Say What You Mean. And there are three primary trainings or three primary steps to working on our communication. So I'll say what each of them are, and then I'll say a few words about them. And then we'll have some time for a little bit of questions and discussion. And we'll end the evening a little bit before 9. So if anyone wants to connect, I'll be available to sign books if anyone has a book or wants to pick one up. So the three trainings for bringing more skill to our communication. So the first is to train in what I call presence, which is another word for mindfulness. But for me, that word presence carries a slightly different connotation than mindfulness. Mindfulness is something that's up here, that we're kind of doing, kind of looking down at things. And for me, presence is something that's here. And it's like, no, I'm here. Says that we're embodied, we're present. So the first is training in presence. The second is training in our intentions, becoming more aware of where we're coming from inside. And then the third is training our attention. Intention and attention, what we're focusing on, what are we looking at? How are we using our attention? Are we choosing wisely what we think? What we look at, what we listen to in a conversation, in a relationship. How do we use our attention to focus on things that are going to be helpful? So presence, intention, and attention. I'm going to say more about each of these. So presence means that we start by being here. For each of these trainings, I offer like a little instruction, like a step to say, this is, you just take these steps. There's three main steps. So the first step for the training in presence is to lead with presence. What that means is that before any of the words, before our agenda, before the emotions, before anything else, can we just show up? Can we just be here? And it's one of those things that's so obvious that we often forget and overlook it. Right? People can feel it when we're here. And you can feel it when you're talking to someone and they're not here. They can be looking you right in the eyes, yeah? And if their mind is somewhere else, we feel it on some level. Right? Hey, are you with me? What's going on? Right? So presence lays the foundation for connection and understanding, right? Communication is about understanding. It's about sending and receiving messages, whatever it is, even if we're just trying to, you know, like, would you pass me the salt? It's still, I'm trying to help you to understand something, like that thing over there, I want it, move it here. I'm trying to send a message. If we're not present, no understanding happens. Communication cannot occur without presence, without being here. And yet this is the one thing that goes out the window often the most quickly, particularly if there's any kind of, you know, difficulty or stress in the conversation. So to lead with presence, just to show up. So this means that we're here. It means that we recognize the more that, this is one of the ironies or the paradoxes of presence, is that the more I connect with myself and really show up, the more I start to become aware of you. I recognize I'm not the only person here. Oh, there's other people here, right? And then we begin to experience mutuality, which is the basis of relationship. So to have a conversation means that we need to be relating to one another, right? And that begins with relating to myself. If you want to have better relationships in your life, one of the main places to start is here. If you don't have a good relationship with yourself, how are you going to have a relationship with someone else? Right? If I'm not present, if I'm not relating to myself, then who are they relating to? If I'm not here, there's no one to relate to. Do you know that one when you're talking to someone and even they're listening, but it's like, where are you? I can't find you. Like, I don't feel like you're with me. So developing that in ourself, developing a sense of really being here, having a relationship with ourself so that we're available to actually relate to others. It was just teasing. I thought I was going to sneeze. I want to acknowledge that we're up against a lot here. It sounds simple and easy to say, but our whole society is going in the other direction from presence. So we live in a society and a culture that is disembodied. Everything is virtual. Right? It's all out there, either in the future or in a screen. Planning, television, telephone. Tele means distant, so it's distant reality rather than being here. We live in a culture and a society that's based on instant gratification, right? Now, faster, better, more efficient. Now, give it to me. Just touch screen button, push it and it happens, right? Remember dial-up? Right? I mean, like, it takes, you know, less than a second for a web page to load, and we're like, come on, come on. So our nervous systems are attuning to the pace of our electronics, which is not natural. A screen is not an organic phenomenon. The world doesn't work at that speed. Yeah, technology does, but human beings don't. So how much of the time in a conversation are we like, come on, come on, get to the point. What are you trying to say? Conversation takes time. Words are formed with breath. We have to breathe, we have to listen, we have to wait. So presence means going against those forces of disembodiment, of instant gratification. We live in a society, in a culture that's where there's a profound fragmentation of our attention. Where the demands on our attention every day are being pulled in, you know, thousands of directions. Everything trying to capture our attention. Why? Because the longer we pay attention to something, the more someone's earning money on advertising. That's the way the economy works. So everything's trying to grab our attention. So, yeah, it's no wonder we can't focus on something for more than a few seconds. Right? Because everything is training our mind to jump, to fragment, to move from this to this to this. Ever had try to have a conversation with someone when they're looking at their phone? Right? Ever try to have a conversation yourself when you're looking at your phone with someone else? It's impossible. Right? Wait, what did you say? I'm gonna say it again? Sorry, I wasn't listening. So presence is going against that fragmentation. It means that we're actually collecting our attention. We're learning how to stay with another person, with a conversation, with what's happening long enough to actually work through something and talk about something meaningful. And the last kind of characteristic of our society and culture these days is this deep sense of alienation. Separation from one another, but not just from each other, from ourselves, from the earth, from a sense of place and belonging. So presence means that we're actually learning how to, we're reclaiming our autonomy and authority over our life from these forces of society. And saying, I'm choosing to live in this body, to put my attention where I want my attention to be, not where, you know, the next billboard or pop-up wants it to be. I'm choosing to relate to myself, to others, to develop a sense of place and belonging and rootedness. So all of this is this training in presence, which is the foundation of having meaningful and effective conversations. So this is the first step, to lead with presence. How do we do this? Well, I don't have a lot of time left, so I'll just give you one tool tonight, and if you want to learn more, come back tomorrow. Pause. Just pause. It doesn't need to be long. Just take half a breath. Okay, say it again. Let me see if I can understand. Just that, just one half a breath. Just slow down a little bit. That can help us to come back to presence. So this is one tool. There are many others. This is one tool to lead with presence, to bring more presence into our conversations. One of the things that I do is teaching retreats on mindfulness and communication, where we go back and forth from silence to relating and conversing into silence. It's a very powerful way to practice. And so one of the last retreats I taught this past summer in New Mexico, at the end of the retreat, we had a closing circle. and each of the participants was sharing. There's at least one person here who was on that retreat. And there's this one gentleman on the retreat who hadn't said much the whole week. Older man, Midwestern Colorado, kind of cowboy type. So, you know, I was a little bit curious how everything was landing with him. A lot of focus on opening the heart and, you know, connecting and that sort of stuff that doesn't generally fit the sort of gender stereotype of a, you know, Midwestern male identified person. So I was just curious what he would have to say. The microphone comes around to him. He says, "What I'm taking away from this retreat is that my wife is the person I talk to the most, but talk with the least. I'm going to change that when I go home." That's the power of leading with presence. It says there's two people here, and to be in that space together. So as we train in presence, as we become more aware of our experience, one of the things that we start to notice is our intentions. We start to notice that our actions, our words, even our thoughts are motivated by certain impulses inside, certain intentions, and that based on those intentions, we get pushed in one way or another. And so we notice that some intentions are more helpful than others in conversation. Like the intention to be right. Feels really good when we can get there, but how useful is it in terms of actually developing a relationship with someone? You know? The intention to judge, to protect, to defend, to blame, to judge, to attack, all of these kind of habitually conditioned responses to difference or conflict that come up, which serve a purpose, they're trying to support us, but actually aren't supportive for dialogue. Right? Like being right never helped create a more meaningful conversation between two people, you know? Even if you win and you're right, do you feel closer? Afterwards, you know, do you get the understanding that you want? And there might be some satisfaction, but not in that deep way where we really feel like the other person gets us. So we start to become aware of our intentions and to see that I can actually choose to have intentions that are more helpful, that are more skillful, that are going to go in the direction that I want, that are going to create the conditions for having a more meaningful conversation. And so the instruction here, the step here, is to come from curiosity and care. These are very powerful intentions for relationship. They're very powerful intentions for meditation as well. Curiosity and care. There are many, many helpful intentions that we can have, but these two, as a default, are some of the most useful. So to fall back on, to learn how to train ourselves to fall back on coming from a place of curiosity and care. One of the things that I point out in teaching communication is that our communication training and skillful communication is not primarily about what we say. It's about where we're coming from inside and the quality of understanding that we're able to create with the other person. Because you can use all of the nicest words and make I statements and active listen all you want, right? And if you're trying to manipulate the other person, they're going to feel it. Yeah? Maybe some of you have even known somebody who went to a nonviolent communication training and came home speaking in very strange ways. And you had the sense that they were using all these fancy new words, but still running the same trip inside of like, you're wrong and you should do it my way, but they just had a much more sophisticated way of saying that that made them feel like really like they were right. It's not about what we say. It's about where we're coming from. And does the other person understand? That's what communication's about. So I said there are three foundations, this presence, intention, attention. So lead with presence, come from curiosity and care. Notice I haven't said anything yet about the words, because so much of our communication is not in the words. It's about what's happening inside and where we're coming from. So if you left tonight with nothing else than just like slow down, try to be present, take a pause, and you actually practiced that, that would have a strong impact on your life. Or if you just left here and said, okay, come from curiosity and care. How do I get curious in this conversation? How can I connect with my heart a little bit more? How can I remember what I care about? Doesn't mean you have to like everyone. Doesn't mean you have to care about everyone. It means that you care about something, that you're connected to your heart, that you don't lose the sense of your own values in a heated moment. Learn how to do that. So another person on one training I was doing told me a story about using these tools of pausing and coming from curiosity and care. She'd been married to her husband for a number of years. They had a terrible fight. Horrific. And he was walking across the room ready to leave. Not like leave the house, like leave the marriage. And she paused inside. And she reconnected with curiosity and care. She found that care inside. And she called out to him. And she said, Bobby, you know, I think we can really turn this around if you're willing and if I'm willing. And he stopped. And he turned around, and he walked back in, and they sat down on the couch, and they started to talk, and really listen, and they're able to work through things, and stayed together. There's that ability to pause and reconnect with a deeper intention. What's really important to me now? Where do I want to be coming from? These are the conditions for having meaningful conversations. So the third step is training our attention, learning how to focus our attention in places that are more likely to help us get our needs met. So instead of focusing on being right, on what the other person did last time that pissed us off and how they're probably going to do it again and they're never going to change and all of our thoughts and judgments and shoulds and shouldn'ts. Instead of focusing on those areas, learning to focus on specific aspects of our experience that can help us to understand one another and connect. And this is where the training of nonviolent communication comes in, which is a form of communication that was founded by a man named Marshall Rosenberg a few decades ago that's been used all over the world, not just for interpersonal communication and personal healing, but in mediation, international conflict resolution, in organizations, for social change, many, many different applications for these tools. And at the core, at the heart of it, is learning how to identify what matters most in a situation. Learning how to focus our attention on a different level of human experience, the level of our core needs. What is it that matters? What is it that's motivating us? Underneath what we want, why do we want it? What is it that's really important? How do we listen in that way? How do we identify the deeper longings inside someone, or the objective? What we find when we can shift our attention to that place is that we find our common humanity. We find that we have more in common than we have that separates us. And this is based on a fundamental view. There you are. I knew you were coming to that. I couldn't find your face. Hi. When we can do this, this is based on the understanding that as human beings, we're motivated to meet our needs. Just like a plant turns towards the light, human beings are trying to feel fulfilled. We're not always conscious of it. We're not always successful at it. But on some level, we can understand all of our actions, all of our behaviors, as an attempt to meet some basic fundamental need. And we can focus our attention in that way. We can learn to pay attention to ourselves and to others in this way, to focus on what matters. And this is the third step. Focus on what matters. What's important here? To me, to you, to us. And that's the place that we can start to hear one another and understand each other and eventually work together to be more creative about where we're going in a relationship, as a community, or as a society. So I'll tell you one more short story about the third training, and then we can shift into some discussion and questions. So this story is in the book. A colleague of mine was teaching a workshop on nonviolent communication, was teaching this concept, this premise, that comes from humanistic psychology, which is that everything we do as human beings, we do to meet some need. Okay? So this one participant was driving home after the workshop. This is like a day-long training. And he's in his car. He reaches for a cigarette. And as he's reaching for the cigarette, something inside remembers this premise. And he says, okay, well, all right, so if everything we do to meet a need, then I'm trying to meet some need here, smoking a cigarette. Right? That's my strategy. That's what I want. And there's some deeper need here. He says, okay, well, let's test this stuff out. Let's see. What do I need right now? So he thought about it. So, I want to take a break from my thoughts. I want to take a break. I want to relax, take my mind off things. And I want to feel good. Relax, feel good, take my mind off things. That's probably what I need right now. And he paused and thought about it. He said, I don't need a cigarette to do that. And stop smoking. Obviously, not everyone can stop smoking cold turkey like that. But it points to the power of this awareness. Right? When we're not aware of our needs, we're not really at choice. We're just doing things without even knowing why. As soon as we start to inquire, as soon as we even remember this question, what matters? What do I need right now? That transforms everything. Now we start to actually look inside and see, what is it I'm after here? What's important to me? Why? Why am I moving in this direction? What am I hoping for? Once we can identify that and be aware of it, now we can actually start to evaluate, okay, is this course of action actually going to provide that? Is this going to come at a cost? Maybe there's a better way to do it. So this is a training in learning to focus on what matters. It starts with ourself, and then we can also apply that to others to try to understand, well, where are you coming from? When you did that, you had some reason. What was it? What were you after? Right? So this is the doorway to compassion. It helps us to see the humanity in others behind views that we may disagree with, behind actions that we may feel frightened by because they threaten our sense of safety for ourselves, our loved ones, or our community. That we can still look at another person and not demonize them. That we can look beyond the surface words and actions and see some deeper core value or need that we can connect with and say, maybe they're after this. I disagree with their choices. I'm not supporting that, but I can try to understand what matters to them. And that's where we can find our shared humanity. And that opens the doorway to being able to listen and work together across our differences. So I think I'll stop here for the evening. Thank you so much for your kind attention. I hope it's been useful. So we have some time if there are questions about any of the things that I've shared this evening. And I think we have a microphone. Oh, it's corded. Okay. So I just invite you to speak up then, and I can repeat your question. And if you need to leave early, that's fine. Just an invitation to check some of the materials on the table on your way out. If you'd like to stay in touch, some of my materials are there on the table. So, any questions? Yeah, please. If you feel the need to stand up, use the bathroom, please feel free to. Yeah, if you need to stretch your legs, go for it. We're going to stop in about 15 minutes. I know that you guys usually take a break on these evenings, and I chose not to since we're going to end a little early. So thank you for suffering through.
So I have a question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And open and able to manage different feelings that are coming up in a situation. If I'm talking with someone who's also working
yes, right.
on these things, the same premise and mm-hmm. working on these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, what about those situations
right.
where connection is not the goal?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That we need to disconnect from or stand
sure.
up to.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
You know, I just wonder if it's like
yeah.
both, right? You can still stay present
yeah.
and have good attention
mm-hmm.
and intention, but you're not trying to connect with
that yeah.
situation or that person.
Sure. So let me just summarize what I'm hearing so others maybe who didn't hear you. So this person is saying she heard, she took away that I was saying that the goal of communication is connection, which I'm going to refine in a moment because that's not so much what I'm saying. But, you know, what about situations where there isn't a shared desire or intention for connection, or where maybe you specifically don't want to connect because you want to set a boundary or a limit or, you know, oppose someone's actions in some way? You know, can you still be coming from a place of presence and intention, but, you know, not necessarily be wanting to connect? So a connection isn't always the goal. Absolutely, I would agree with you on that. The phrase that I use, that I say over and over again, is communication is not about what we say, it's about where we're coming from and the quality of understanding or connection that we're able to create. So there are different degrees of connection. And the aim is to create just enough connection for the task at hand. So if you're talking to a friend or a family member or a partner, that's going to be a much deeper level of connection than if you're talking with a coworker, and that's going to be even still a different level of connection than if you're talking with somebody that you're having, you know, some kind of a negotiation with. But there needs to be, if there's no connection at all, then there's no communication happening. So one of the main kind of misunderstandings of a lot of communication techniques, including nonviolent communication, is we just have to connect. If we just connect deeply enough, it's going to work. A lot of people aren't interested in connection. The idea is how much connection is necessary for this particular context in this particular situation. And then we gauge how we're relating accordingly. Does that address it? Yeah, great. Thank you. Other questions or comments? Yeah, please. Yeah.
They're distracted or not really willing to show up.
Sure. Right. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So I'll just again repeat the question. Are there ways to support or invite the other person to be more present, recognizing that obviously we can't control people? Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And I think, you know, that awareness of the limits of our influence is key, right? But there is that sense of invitation. And so much of having a more successful or meaningful conversation is about the conditions that we create. And so a lot of that is going to be, particularly if it's, if we have a choice over the conversation. So sometimes we end up in a conversation and it's just like we didn't plan it. Right? It's just like all of a sudden we're having a conversation, right? But even then we can sometimes step back and say, you know, it seems like this is a really kind of charged or important conversation that we've stumbled into. And I'm realizing this might not be the best time or place. Like it's noisy or I've got to go in 5 minutes, you know, could we come back to this at another time where we both have a little more space, right? So I think the way that I would want to approach it is first by trying to identify some shared need or objective, right? So it's not just about me, but it's about us. It's not just like, I really want this, well, good for you, right? But no, like, how is this going to contribute to the other person, right? So to try to see what can you be aware of or identify that both people share in common, right? And so in a work situation that might be, listen, you know, I know that both of us really care about this project and we want it to, you know, have the best outcome it can have, right? In a friendship, it might be, you know, you mean a lot to me and we've been friends for a while. And I think, I'm imagining both of us really value our friendship and I want that to keep kind of growing and really being able to enjoy each other, right? So we're framing things in terms of something that's shared, and then we're putting it, and then we're suggesting, we're offering a suggestion like, you know, I have a sense that it might be more supportive to talk about this in this situation or at this time, or how does that sound to you? Would you be up for that? What do you think about that? And then kind of tossing it back to the other person, so you're inviting them into the process. That's how I would approach it. Yeah. Thanks. I think the other thing you point to that's really kind of insightful is one of the questions that comes up the most that's kind of embedded in both of the questions each of you asked is, you know, yeah, this stuff is great when the other person's interested in it, but what about all those people who aren't, which is most of the world, right? So if these tools only worked with people who had them and shared them, they would be extremely limited. So the power of these tools is that it only takes one person to change the dynamic in a relationship, because a relationship by definition is co-created, right? So if one of us starts to relate differently, that has to affect the relationship. So on the one hand, there's that reality, that truth, that if we start showing up differently, if we start relating differently, listening differently, speaking differently, that's going to have an effect on the relationship. It can start to shift things. At the same time, precisely because it's co-created, there's this other variable that we don't control. So there are situations in which if the other person, you know, is just completely unwilling to come around or engage, there are times when we were unable to create all of the conditions for the conversation. So it goes both ways in that. And the more resistant the other person is, or the more upset or reactive they are, the higher our skill level needs to be. Right? You see that? To have a meaningful conversation in that situation. Any other questions or comments before we come to closure? Yeah.
Regarding what need are you trying to have met? Mm-hmm. Quite often for me, it's a need to feel validated, or like what I feel matters. Uh-huh. My communicating with. I think that often translates into me trying to convince them that I'm right.
Mm.
So I'm just trying to kind of tease out how to.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's a very important point. So this person's saying one of the needs that they recognize often being aware of in a conversation is the need to be validated, or the need to know either that you matter or that this particular thing that you're caring about matters. And the strategy then becomes for the other person to acknowledge that you're right in some way, and how to get around that and not, because you see the limitation of trying to convince them. So a few things. One, I think that we are pointing to one of our deepest, most core needs as human beings, which is the need to know that we matter. You're also kind of opening the door to acknowledge that the work here is there's sort of three phases or three dimensions to this work around our needs, our values, what matters to us. Needs is a very charged word because it comes with that energy of demand, which is not what's meant by need. It's just like what motivates us, what's important to us. So the first is becoming aware of them. If we can't identify and become aware of our needs, there's no place to go. The second step is, how are we relating to our needs? And so this is a little bit where I'm hearing your question, which is if I have a need to know that this matters, but there's that sense of like, I need you to, right? That energy of demand and grasping, it's very hard to have an open exchange, because that contraction in the heart, the other person will feel that, and it challenges their autonomy. When you feel that energy from someone else, like, I need this from you, it's like, whoa, like, you know, maybe I'm not so sure about that. So we want to work to with a variety of tools to find a different relationship with that need. And some of that can be through meditation, some of it can be through having the need met in other relationships where it's easier to feel like this part of ourselves matters, so that there's less pressure in this particular relationship, right? So that's the second. And then the third part is learning how to express and ask for our needs to be met in a collaborative way, in an open way. So if you skip that middle step, if you're like, I need to know that I matter, tell me that I'm right. You know, if without that inner step of, and that's where the real work is, of how am I relating to this? Is there that sense of demand? It has to be this way. I must have this, and I must have it from you. That's going to make it very difficult in the conversation. So some of that work is learning to meet the need ourselves, in the sense of like, well, I know that this matters, and can I find a place inside that recognizes that there's some sense of that being enough? That's not the whole picture, but it's part of the picture. And can we find other places in our life where we're getting that reflection back, either that we matter or that this a particular part of ourself is valued and important, so that we feel nourished enough that we're not coming to the table feeling so hungry and starved. And that creates more space to engage with the other person, because if they're not able to meet that need for us, then we can recognize, you know, that's okay, because you're just one person and there's other people in my life. And I also know in myself that I'm okay, because I recognize the value in this. And that's a much more stable flexible and free place from which to meet someone else. It doesn't mean we don't ask. It doesn't mean we can't still invite the other person to say, like, hey, this is really important for me, and I would love it if to have some understanding from you about that. But if they're not able to give us that understanding, we're not broken by it. Yeah, thank you. Great. All right, so I think I want to shift towards closing our evening, and just going to share a few pieces of information with you in closing. So one is, so I'll be back here tomorrow for a day-long workshop, going into some of these tools in a lot more detail and doing a lot of exercises to actually training in some of this more skillful communication, and working with some of the material that's in my book, Say What You Mean. So we wanted to just get a sense of, from those of you who are here tonight, how many people are planning on coming tomorrow, because we're going to have handouts, and we just want to have a quick count. So if you know that you're coming tomorrow, would you raise your hand? I'm just going to get a count here. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, okay. If you're on the fence, you might come, but you're not sure. About another 6 or 8, so maybe 24 people total out of those who are here. Great. So, and then just a few invitations to connect, to stay in touch. So, let's see. So the best way to stay in touch, if you found this useful and you enjoy the way I talk about things or present some of these teachings, I would love to stay in touch. The best way to do that is through my email list. I send out 2 emails a month. I write them myself. They're not written by a marketing person or anything. And every email has something of value in it, either a talk that I've given or an article I've written or an invitation to a free event, something like that. So there's an email list on that table, and there's one on that table, and you can print your email address. It's a great way to stay in touch. There's also teaching schedules out, and if you want to learn more of this stuff, you can't come tomorrow, but you're interested in looking at training, I'm teaching a 12-week online course based on the book. That starts in a couple weeks. And there's discounts if you register with a friend or a small group. And if the finances are an issue, I'm happy to give scholarships. If you want to take the training, I want you there. So there's some yellow flyers on both of those tables. Feel free to pick one of those up. And then there's also some nice postcards about the book, which are free. Please feel free to take one. Take one for a friend. And obviously there are books for sale if you'd like to pick up a copy. And anyone who wants, I'm happy to sign a copy of the book, or just to say hello afterwards. I'll be hanging out over there. Anything I missed, Tim? Anything to add?
Yeah, so thank you so much, Oren, for sharing the teachings this evening, and it's been very, very illuminating. So thank you very much, and thank you all for coming out this evening, this early January evening. So as Oren said, there's some books for sale on the back table. There's also the 2 Donna baskets. So in this tradition, the teacher, just whatever you give in that basket, that represents his livelihood. So your support of his